Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety. Today we have Joe Chura on the podcast. And Joe's story is a really powerful example of personal transformation and innovation. And he began his career at the Ford Motor Company as an assembly line worker. And that was a position that pushed him to hustle and use every free moment to study and grow. And that drive led Joe to entrepreneurship, where he co-founded two digital marketing platforms that were sold to Cars.com for over $150 million.
But despite this professional success, Joe has found himself grappling with poor health and a problematic relationship with alcohol. His journey towards moderation in drinking not only restored his health, but sparked his next entrepreneurial venture, Go Brewing, one of the fastest growing craft brewing companies in the country. Focusing on non-alcoholic and low-alcohol beers, Grow Brewing is redefining how we think about social drinking and mindful living, and Joe's mission is to create brews that allow people to enjoy their social lives without the negative side effects of alcohol.
Today, we'll dive into Joe's personal and professional journey and explore how hustle culture, entrepreneurship, and sobriety intersect.
It's nice to have you here, Joe. Thank you for coming on our show today.
Thank you for having me.
So you started out working on the assembly line at Ford. So how did you balance that job while also working towards your dreams of something bigger?
It's a good question, but the reality is I would never have predicted that, one, I'd be here talking about a non-alcoholic beer company back in 1990. And secondly, to go back to my intro, like I never would have thought I did that. I'm a big believer in like looking at a few steps in front of you to achieve what you want in that moment. So I felt I was really constrained by my environment when I look back and think about my time in the assembly plant, because my biggest aspiration when I was working at the assembly plant was to stay in the assembly plant as a manager and a supervisor there, because that's all I saw and that's all I knew. And amongst my peers, that was just like the best job you can possibly get in your entire life. So it was more of like when I found myself starting there, and mainly it was because I found out I was going to be a father when I was young and I needed a good job, then I was in this predicament where I knew I didn't want to do it forever. I knew I wasn't very marketable. I could barely take care of myself at the time and definitely didn't have a college degree or anything like that at that point, because I was 20. And I was like, okay, the only way out is through, and that was through going to school. And that was it. Like that was my dream, is to get through school and be a manager at that plant.
Yeah, I get that. So there's this idea that I've spent a lot of time thinking about since I got sober, about like hustle culture, and people see it as this necessary evil in entrepreneurship, but it can really take a toll. It took a toll on me and my health. So once you did start succeeding, how did that pressure to succeed affect your physical and mental health?
You know, I've been really fortunate. So after I had graduated college and was able to work my way off the assembly line to the Ford marketing and sales division, I began to see more of the world. My environment now got a lot bigger, and I was seeing successful car dealers and businessmen and business people from all over the world like do these amazing things, and I had not seen that in my life. So I was now exposed to something new. But as I kind of grew out of Ford and I started to really develop a passion for digital marketing, really stemmed from my childhood, and my brothers would be fascinated with video games, and I would be like trying to program on the Commodore 64. I mean, this is like predates many people who are listening to this podcast, but it's literally like taking a book and writing code, and I just like doing that, you know, how you find yourself liking something. So when I started the digital marketing agency, I would say that I was really fortuitous because most of what I did was fun to me. My wife would be, there was a moment where my wife is sitting on the couch. She's watching Bravo, Real Housewives of Orange County. It's 2009 or 10, like early days, like the first season of like, you know, the first set. And I'm next to her and I have headphones on and I'm programming on the computer. And she looks at me and she goes, "Why are you always working?" And I said, "This is what I do for fun. Like this is, you're watching Bravo for fun. I'm doing this for fun." Now I would learn all about the Real Housewives through osmosis and just be kind of watching it, like looking up. So I was definitely like educated into that whole world of it. But the reality is I didn't find it initially to be like this arduous work, like the assembly line. Like the assembly line was a grind. And when I go back in context to my life then, to my life now, I often forget how hard that life was in comparison to what I do now, because 0% of that was fun. The only fun thing was when the bell rang and I was done and you could leave your job there. Now it's like, I can't wait to wake up to work on these problems. So I might be working 18 hours a day, literally, but 17 of those 18 are fun for me. So I don't even feel like it's work.
I really relate to that actually, Joe. Like I really, really relate to that because I love being a therapist and I love that I'm a relationship therapist. So my partner too will be like, you're working. And I'm like this, reading books about like too good to leave, too bad to stay. This
girl,
is my jam. Love doing this, right? I
story
love doing
my
this.
Life.
And people are like, what, how can you, and I'm like, this is the most fun thing ever.
Yeah.
So I get it. I do get that.
Okay. I'm fine with it.
You had been talking about how when you sold your companies, you like mm-hmm. realized you're not in great health, right?
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So the question is, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who want to prioritize their well-being?
Yep. So I think it's a great question. And it's something I didn't really think of until much later in my entrepreneur journey. When I had started to build these companies, I went from zero to 400 employees in the span of 5 years. And when I sold them in 2018, I look at pictures of myself, 2018, 2019, I'm 240 pounds, completely out of shape. It's very clear that all those hours I was spending, I was neglecting my health in those. Well, in the height of COVID, my wife and I hit a moment where we just felt like gluttons. We were drinking a lot. We were eating a lot. It was like every day there's just a new excuse to order out because we're helping local restaurants. And it was just this like perpetual cycle that we finally were like, okay, we need to do something. So we did a 75-day challenge where we abstained from alcohol. And I could tell you that within the first 30 days, I felt like I had superpowers. And I felt like I didn't understand how I could even have built what I built under the cloud of alcohol, the way I had been drinking and living. And something felt unlocked for me. I was more mentally clear, as I alluded to, but I also had way less anxiety, just like less social anxiety, less anxiety about my work, my job. At the time, we sold to a public company, so I went from a not knowing much about business to all of a sudden building this big company. And then now I'm literally in a boardroom with like activist investors and learning by fire. And so it was pretty crazy. I started to develop like some imposter syndrome and some like, man, how am I even here? And when you're under the cloud of alcohol, you don't realize how the anxiety perpetuates itself through you in like many different ways. When you stop drinking, you see things objectively in a different way, and you're like, man, like this, I don't have to have this anxiety. I don't have to feel this shitty about things. I don't have to wake up and feel like, oh man, what's going to happen today? And it started to fade away. But then also the real positive side effect from not drinking is you make better decisions around nutrition. You're not eating those burritos at midnight. You're not like, oh yeah, I'm going to start the diet. Everything started to get better, and I started to lose a bunch of weight, and then I started to really take on a fitness persona. There's a book of David Goggins behind me. Right in 2019, I had this conference called Refuel, and I had David Goggins out here to speak, and he actually did a run for my house. If anyone doesn't know who he is, he's a ex-Navy SEAL, arguably like one of the fittest guys on the planet. Well, he's out here and he's doing a run for my house. We have 40 people here, and I couldn't even keep up with the run. Like I did good for the first mile and a half, and then he went ahead, and I felt like, I felt kind of shitty because like he had to navigate his way back to my house. He was so far ahead of me and this whole group. I mean, it was a point where it was like, okay, I need to be healthy, not only for myself, but what's the point of all this? What's the point of building a company and selling it, feeling good financially, if you're going to die of a heart attack? Mm-hmm. And that's where I was headed. And my father died from alcoholism. My brother, who's 2 years younger, had massive issues. He was in the hospital literally every other week and was almost about to die. And I helped him go to rehab. And he did a lot of work himself, obviously. I mean, pretty much all himself. But now he's 3 years sober. And so I just have seen a lot of things, and health and wellness, they can work when you're an entrepreneur and you're building something, but you have to prioritize it. And I think my tip would be get a workout in the morning. It's going to start your day in a much better way. You're going to have momentum. Like before this podcast, I did a 5 mile run and almost a block of lunges with someone, one of my workout partners, said, but now I feel so much better. You know, we're starting this at 7:15 a.m., you know, Central Time, and we're rocking, right? If I didn't have that, I just came out of bed, it would just be completely different. So my life has done a complete 180 when it comes to that. And prioritizing starts with looking at your alcohol consumption. If you're not drinking, great, you're a leg up from many people. If you are drinking, even in moderation, I would suggest that you abstain just at least for a period of time just to see how you feel.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So for you, even after or during that 75 days, were there times when you were craving a beer or a drink? And what strategies or tools did you start to use during that time?
What a great segue into building Go Brewing, because literally that was a catalyst for it. I would be running. I remember running. I'm near like a downtown area, not even a mile away, and I'd be running past these bars, and the burgers never smelled so good, and the beer never drew me in more than those moments when I'm running past these pubs, and I was just like, oh, it was like just, it was almost like this force that was trying to drag me in there to say, come in here, Joe, like we miss you. And it's weird how your mind plays tricks on you. But I would run past that place, and then I would go to, you know, I would get away from it, and I would turn the corner, and I was just like, okay, just give me home. Many advice I've heard of drinking is like, get through the night, get through the hour. You know, you look at things in small increments, not dissimilar to how I was talking about my story working on the assembly line. You know, it wasn't my, I didn't have these crazy dreams. I was like, I got to get off the assembly line. Like there, like when you're drinking, you're trying to develop good habits, it's like, let me get home. So I get home and these cravings are still here, and I would open a non-alcoholic beer, and then that's when I was like, wow, there's something here, and my cravings would just go away. So then over time, I just started to buy non-alcoholic beer, and I would have it anytime I would have a craving. And that is a tool for the toolbox, I would say, is like stock your fridge with what I would call like social beverages like our non-alcoholic beer, Go Brewing, or there's many good ones out there. There's non-alcoholic wine. This is a wonderful discovery moment to go to the store, splurge on this new category that's emerging of all these non-alcoholic options. So I think there's no better time to start this than now, because there's just a lot of options on the market that can do what non-alcoholic beer did for me and help curb your craving.
Yeah, I think that's a great tip, actually. And it sounds like it really worked for you when you were having those. Oh my gosh, I can totally imagine you running past the pubs and smelling the burgers and seeing people just feeling, woo, drinking the beer. But that leads me to my next question is, how did your social life change after you reduced your alcohol intake? And how are you able to navigate events where people are drinking alcoholic drinks?
It was a weird time though, right? So
yeah,
it was during COVID. So we were a bit isolated anyway. And what's funny is that we look at, and this could be a tip for people, because I do think, let's be real here. If you are used to drinking for decades, to stop for the rest of your life overnight seems really daunting. You can easily get there. But if you don't have a problem per se, but you're under the cloud of alcohol and you know you want to start to change habits, looking at a challenge is a really good way, because what happens is you start to stack days, I call it, behind you, and that those days give you momentum. And the further away you get from that last drink, the easier it is. The tricky thing with drinking to me that I found, and I've recently found this, I discover things. I'm in my mid 40s now, and every week I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I feel this way. Alcohol has this proximity effect that I call it, where you have this massive craving really close to the last time that you drank, where if you abstain for a week and then you drink again, that very next day after you drank, even if you're like, I'm going to stop for another week, is going to be so much harder than that sixth day before the seventh day where you had that drink, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's one of these things where it's like, it's not that you can't ever have a drink if you're a moderate drinker, but just know that the momentum that you built, it's going to be hard, and there's going to be a lot of forces behind you saying, hey, come back here that very next day after you had that drink to say, do you remember how good this felt? And that's the tricky thing about it, is that it plays tricks on you constantly. So for me, in a social setting during COVID, that wasn't a massive problem. But what I did is we looked at Thanksgiving, or okay, to get to Thanksgiving, where we definitely want wine and we definitely want to indulge. And part of this challenge was it was a diet component too. And I want to eat a lot of turkey and gravy and mashed potatoes and, you know, all that stuff. When do we need to start? So we started in the end of the summer, right? And then that got us to the 75 days right before Thanksgiving. Well, what happened is Thanksgiving came and I didn't want wine anymore. I didn't have those massive cravings, but I was around a bunch of people. And I think at the time, this was 2020, it was my family and my wife's family, so it wasn't a huge deal. They don't really care if I drink or not drink, and they're not huge drinkers, so that was helpful. So I think to be around friends that are, or family members that are in that camp, if you're around people that are partying and you're used to doing shots on Christmas, which I know some families do, probably not a great idea to be there.
Not our family.
I grew up in a family where every Christmas you do a shot on Thanksgiving and Christmas. It was just a normal thing. But
I love that.
Yeah, so I think you just have to be really intentional about who you're going to be around. Don't put yourself in positions that you're going to have cravings that might be, or temptations. So if you're going to tell me, hey, during that 75 day challenge, I want you to meet your two high school buddies at the Irish bar that you guys used to hang out at, and you guys just hang out for 5 hours, that'd probably be a bad move. I probably would have succumbed to the temptation of drinking, because I would be in a situation now where I'd be so tempted to drink. If I avoid it, it's a non-issue. So I think being really smart in the early part of any sort of absence of drinking is a good play. Then I would say today, I'm a little biased maybe, but I think that the stigma around having non-alcoholic options at a bar or a party is much different than it was a few years ago. It's actually almost cool in a way. It's like a discovery moment where people are, you're grabbing this beer can here and you're like, what is that in your hand? This is one of our new designs. And it creates a conversation, and it doesn't look like non-alcoholic beer. It looks like a crazy craft beer can. And that in itself was really intentional. So people aren't walking around with a big O'Doul's or non-alcoholic beer. And I always say O'Doul's because they were the first players, and people see that and they're like, why are you drinking that? And the whole point is, today it's much more acceptable to have non-alcoholic options, and I think even in 2020. But regardless, don't put yourself in a situation where you're amongst a ton of people drinking and that you know you're going to be tempted. Just stay away from it.
I think that's good advice. Now, not everyone needs to stop drinking entirely, but they can moderate, and it can be just as difficult, actually. How have you managed to strike a balance between total abstinence and mindful drinking? And what can you share about being able to moderate?
For me, I go in streaks. So it is tough from that proximity effect. I don't even know if that's a thing. You guys are much smarter than I am and can tell me if that is a medical term or not, but like what I like to do is to get the furthest away is in the most efficient way possible, and then I'll maybe not drink anything for a month, and then I look at times when it makes sense in my life versus times when it doesn't, and I'll tell you a story about the contrast. So I'm getting home from a trip. I land in Chicago, which is my home airport, and I'm waiting for a driver, and I have about 15 minutes at the running late, and I end up going to the bar, and I pound two 16-ounce glasses of an IPA beer before this driver picks me up. That happened several years ago. But that is a time when I think about mindful drinking, and did I need to drink there? No, that was silly. I was by myself. I was heading home to see my family. That clearly was a sign of a problem for me. For other people, I mean, maybe that's their way to unwind, whatever. But not a very good way to go about it, versus like my intention otherwise would be to really think about where I'm going, where I'm headed. And the terms I use are remember tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Remember what tomorrow is, like how you want to feel. Like you can get crazy and jump on the desk on the holiday party and get nuts, but remember tomorrow. If you have a run or you have an event coming up and you want to overdrink because you're out with some colleagues the night before that you haven't seen, that's great, but remember tomorrow how you're going to feel. So I try to think about the consequences of my actions in a much different way. And now when I go to the movies with my kids, I'm not drinking. I used to. I'm not doing any of that. But if I'm out with my wife and we are on a trip and there's a wine pairing that happens to go with the food in the right way and it just feels good, then I will. And so I didn't make it like a binary thing. But I will say that because I know that if I have a drink and I break my streak, then I know that proximity effect is going to make it a lot harder that next day. I will have to try really hard to say, okay, I had this. I know the next day I'm going to go away, so I'm going to try to stay away as far as I can and create another streak pretty soon after that. And sometimes that'll go for a month. Sometimes it'll go for 2 weeks. But that's how I kind of separate those times when I drink.
Sonia has this term that she uses about playing the tape forward.
I was just going to say that.
Do you want to say it?
No, I was just going to say it though.
She has this thing that she says about like, okay, if you play the tape forward, how is this going to impact you? And it's what you're saying, Joe, is like, okay, if you have a big run the next day or something, like if you play the tape forward, how are you going to feel if you've consumed like this many drinks or whatever? Like, what is that? What's that going to be like for you?
That's great. Yes.
Yeah. I think that, so my tape
goes like this, which is I have a drink. Let's say I would have a glass of wine on Tuesday. I can have a glass of wine on Tuesday. But then Thursday, I'm like, you know, I was fine with that glass of wine. Maybe I'll have two glasses of wine. And then by Saturday, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to drink this bottle. So my tape shows me I'm unable to moderate. And so how, for people listening, how can they think of themselves as, are they someone who's able to moderate, or are you somebody that is better off with abstinence? And what questions can they ask themselves?
It's a great question. And one thing I learned from being in this space is that we all exist on a spectrum. And it's really hard for me to answer that because alcohol affects us so differently. My brother, for example, who's 3 years sober, he should never have a drink, but he can have non-alcoholic beer. And I was scared that he even wanted that, but he's fine with it because he's so far removed from the thought of how his life was when he was drinking. He was so mentally like, I can never drink. Like, he had to start over in his life at 40. Like, almost where, like, I started working at the Chicago Assembly Plant. He had to start there. And he's like, I cannot believe I wasted so much of my life. So he's so mentally there that he will never have a drink. There's other people that may be able to moderate. And I don't know a good answer to that. But I will say that if you are in the spectrum of you're not sure which way you want to go, just take a break. See if non-alcoholic beer or another beverage can help. And there's no harm in not drinking. So it's just something that you're going to have to feel for yourself. But I think the reality of it is most of us are under the clod of alcohol. And you don't realize it. Even if you're drinking twice a week and you're having two drinks a week, it takes a while for it to get out of your system completely. And if you've been doing that, which on paper may not look like it's an issue, you're probably going to benefit by staying away from a period of time. And I would suggest you try that.
I think that's great advice.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Now, you talked about the need for an alternative to alcohol during social occasions and when you're running past the pubs and stuff, seeing the people drinking beer. Can you share more about that moment or that realization when you thought, I need to create something for this? Like, I need to create a solution for this. And how did that grow into Go Brewing?
Yeah, so there was a few things that happened. And early in my life, I just believe in looking at signs of the universe, mm-hmm. and following paths. And there was many things that happened early in the assembly line that I would just... someone might have looked at it as a closed door, and I looked at it as an opportunity. So any little sign for anything, I take it as, maybe there's something here, and I'll try to explore. And what happened with Go is I had built this event called Refuel, which I alluded to a few minutes ago with David Goggins, showed up as a speaker. And I built this event, and we grew it in the height of COVID. I had 80,000 people tune in online and watch this live event. I had some speakers there, motivation, and then I would raise money for charity, and we were able to raise $80,000 for a local food pantry. And it was just an amazing event of inspiration. And it was actually meant for my employees early on to give them a day of reprieve from the grind that they're in and bring in speakers to motivate them, because that's really helped transform my life in 2015 when I heard someone speak for the first time, like in a motivational way. And as this event grew and grew and grew, one piece was missing to me is like everyone would get so inspired and pumped up for that day. But the next day, the dog would bark, the kids were, you know, running out of the house. You're like back in the madness of life and you gotta forget everything. So I'm like, man, what if I had an event called Go? And Go's just been this thing that's been sticking around in my mind for many, many years for whatever reason. And you start the day with a 5K obstacle race. You don't really know what it is. So you start the day with something really hard. Then I bring in a speaker. At the time, I brought in Rich Roll from the Rich Roll podcast.
Yeah.
And I did a fireside chat with him. He did a 5K run with us. And then we did martial arts training. So we had We had a ton of female self-defense trainers there to help females. Then we had males there, and it was just like this really cool moment. And then we had another speaker, and then we did yoga at the end. It was just this beautiful day of doing stuff, not just hearing things. And that's when I really realized that I wanted to, at the end of the conference, not hand out an alcoholic beverage. It was just like, mm-hmm. so, it would be so weird, right? We do this whole thing, but people were like, they want a beer to celebrate. So I actually found non-alcoholic beer. I brought it in. And post that conference, I was starting to, after I sold the businesses, to fade out of my role. And I had built this community of people, but I really didn't have any way of to follow up with them. Or there wasn't a lot to do after that, because you'd have to wait for the next year for that go 2.0 or whatever. So I was like, man, what if I had a local brewery? I can make non-alcoholic beer, and then I actually have something. So that was like the seed that was planting in my head at the time. And then the couple other things happened. I didn't know anything about how to make beer, except I was good at drinking it. That's the only thing I knew about beer. I really wasn't even like a tinkerer and making garage beer or anything like that. I always loved going to breweries. I just never had time to do that. So, but I realized you could sell it online. And if you think about the history of beverage and alcoholic beverages and beer, you could really never do that in the past. Mm-hmm. That is what I know. I know how to do marketing from my previous career. And I was like, man, if I could sell this online, I could figure out how to brew this here in my garage. We could get going and then eventually launch a brewery. And then probably the final thing that happened was post-COVID, I had 35,000 square feet of space for my digital marketing software company, which is quite a bit. And then we decided to sublease half of it. Well, the people we subleased to happened to be a cidery that was located in the parking lot of this other brewery right by us. And they were essentially vacating their spot, getting a bigger space, which was gonna be my tech office. And I asked them what they were doing with their current facility. And they said nothing. They said, we're just gonna leave it. And I was just like, it's in a great location. People pass by it often. It's synonymous with like kind of the beverage district is what I would call it, which is this warehouse area that's tucked away in outside of Naperville. And that was just another sign to me to say, maybe there's something here. And I was so naive at the time that I thought I could take some of their equipment and repurpose it for a brewery. And it turns out you can't use really anything that a cidery has, but that's just an example of how much you had to learn to be able to enter the space in a meaningful way. And so there's a bunch of like little things that happen.
Wow. So what role do you think the breweries and tap rooms play in shifting attitudes for alcohol consumption? What has the response been?
The first day that we opened, I was really surprised in the community that showed up. I thought that our market was going to be people like me, people like that are moderate drinkers. That's it. I didn't think folks that were sober or practicing sobriety were going to be our customers, honestly. Mm-hmm. And that was from such a narrow experience of my family and just seeing the people I knew close to me that just stayed away from non-alcoholic beer and non-alcoholic beverages because they looked at it as a gateway back into mm-hmm. alcohol. But the first day we opened, 30 to 40% of the taproom was filled with people that were sober. And I was pretty shocked and surprised and delighted. And they were so grateful to have a place to hang out, a community gathering spot where they felt comfortable. It wasn't like this weird thing. And the way that we created our brewery is it was very elevated. We put a lot of effort into it to make it very special. It wasn't like an afterthought. That to me really drove these folks that wouldn't otherwise have a place to go into this community aspect where it was very new for them. And what I saw from there is folks that even if they were thinking about non-alcoholic beer, especially in dry January and around then, that time frame, they really loved the fact that like this was a place they could go and it's all NA. And we do have guest beers on tap, so people that did want to drink or they were with someone that did, they felt welcome too. So I just wanted to be very inclusive. I think it was a really helpful tool for many people.
I'm just reflecting like on my own sort of extended family, and my partner's family, they're not sober. They like their drink. And I've noticed that some of them have stopped drinking, like just because they're going through various medical treatments even. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to call him my father-in-law, but he was at a social event on the weekend and he's like drinking the non-alcoholic beer. And I think like, it's a really interesting thing, like this shift. Like, we don't really know always why someone's sober, right? It may be for health reasons, not necessarily because they had a problematic relationship with alcohol, but because they're doing it for health. So I think I can just see your Go Brewing. It can reach so many different audiences.
Yeah, we had a gentleman in our tap room that hadn't drank for 35 years and had his first drink. And I was like, you sure you want this, you know? And he's just like, yeah, I've been looking forward to this moment forever. This past weekend, we had the volleyball parents here. My daughter is 14 and she plays volleyball. And guy here, 23 years. He has first beer in 23 years here at my house this weekend. So it's pretty incredible to like share those moments with people, mm-hmm. that they can have something. And as soon as he had it, he's like, oh my God, this like just brings me back to those moments. And that's pretty amazing to like tie memories from something you drank and not have it affect you in a negative way. It's very mm-hmm. healthy. And he had three beers here, you know, so it was pretty cool. So we see quite a bit of that, which is awesome.
How do you maintain the passion for your work now that Go Brewing has taken off? What helps you stay motivated?
We are like, I think, 1-2% of where we want to be. So it's okay. Like, it's so early and it's so competitive. Mm-hmm. We launched in 23 and I feel like we've done some great things. There's so much room in front of us. And I also am looking at Go Brewing as a social beverage company, not just necessarily an NA beer producer. So there's other things that I have in the works that are going to widen the spectrum of what we do. And we built another facility to be extremely flexible called Craftsmith Beverages. And that's another entity that was created this year with another brewery to be able to produce beer, because we ran out of capacity at Go in the current facility. So we spent all this time building Go Brewing up, and literally within a year we hit our capacity. We could not brew enough beer out of there, so I had to find another alternative. While I'm thinking about that, we were like, why don't we make something that's extremely flexible and we can make a lot of different products.
That's amazing. So what excites you most about the future of the non-alcoholic beer market?
I think there's a ton of potential. What I'm really excited about in this space is innovation and the fact that we can try a lot of things. So the fact that we sell online is incredible, because we're not under the pressure of like we have to make a mass amount of something for retail and hope it works. We can launch a small batch of, let's say, our pumpkin beer, which just came out a few days ago, mm-hmm. and test it, and if that works, then we can produce more of it, or we can wait till the next year and know that we'll make double or triple. And that's really exciting for us. And I also think, like, when I look at what we're doing is, you know, there's a space, I think, for more functional beverages. So non-alcoholic beer or non-alcoholic spirits and with some functional properties to it, whether that's THC, whether that's ashwagandha, whether that is our things to make you feel something physically, mm-hmm. and not just give you a taste. Because the reality is, it's this business is challenging because despite its growth, there's still like less than 3% of all beverages, I mean, far less than 3% are non-alcoholic. Mm-hmm. What that means is you have to spend a lot of time catering to a very wide audience to be a sustainable company. Otherwise, you'd go out of business. Like, for example, if like my business model was to just have an NA tap room, I would have been out of business like probably 6 months after I started. And it's not because the NA tap room in itself couldn't ever be profitable. It's the infrastructure that goes behind making your own product. Huh. Like you're talking, you got to hire a brewing team. 90% of our efforts are in making the product itself. So we make everything ourselves. We have a lab. We have like a ton of QC processes. We have warehouses. We have managers. Making beer is very, very expensive, and it's very slim margin. So if you can't expand to a wide audience quickly, it's going to be tough. Now, if you're a regular brewery and you just add on an NA, that's different because you're going to make a lot of money on your tap room. But most local breweries in the U.S., there's 10,000 breweries. Most local breweries make a lot of their money and profitability like in their tap room. It's not through distribution. For us, it's impossible for that to happen because we're in a suburban area. I'd have to move to a very metro area and have a slightly different model for that to work. So having functional beverages, adding things to give people a feeling outside of just having non-alcoholic, I think really where the segment's going.
So have you encountered any resistance or skepticism about non-alcoholic beer? And how do you manage that?
Oh, I love this question. So we started a folder on our Google Drive where I'll like take comments. I call them like shitty social comments. So that's one where people will say things that are just super shitty around non-alcoholic beer. Like, what's the point of it? And once in a while, I'll like just dive in to debate someone. But it's as you can imagine, like you can't win on the web.
No.
But there's this, you know, here's the reality, right? Like this one person like jumps in there and he's just like, I don't understand non-alcoholic beer and you can't even call it beer technically. It's not called beer and blah, blah, blah. So then I'm like, well, why do you say that? Because the way that we're governed, anything under 0.5% is considered a brew. But the reality is you're like 0.2 ABV away from the difference of something being a brew or beer. So it's very, it's semantic. It is not how we make it. Like we make it the same way. So anything under 0.5% is considered non-alcoholic. Anything above 0.5 is alcoholic. There are many times when our beers, unfortunately, are exceeding that 0.5% threshold and we have to dump them. We have to throw them out.
Yeah.
Because we cannot get it right or take out the alcohol. We don't take out alcohol. So we make it in a way where it produces it. Well, yeast and wort and all the things that make a beer what it is, those are all like living things. And they have, sometimes they have a mind of their own. And this guy got in this debate over me. And I'm like, so you're saying that if it was 0.1% higher, like, that makes a big difference to you. You know what I mean? Like it isn't no bearing on anything. So that's one thing. Probably the worst thing that happened was in our tap room, I had a Cure cover band. And this was a little more than a year ago. And I was so excited for them. We created like this like musical venue too. We have a great sound system. We have lighting. We have everything. We have live music often. And this place was packed, and it was some of our normal customers. I would say probably 25% of the audience was sober, 75% was a mix of people, and then new people coming in to see this band because they had a big following. This lead singer, in the middle of, in the break of between two songs, singers will talk about stories. Well, this guy says, in our non-alcoholic brewery, I don't understand why anyone would drink non-alcoholic beer. It's like cuddling with a prostitute.
I
was so close.
Oh my God.
To taking him and grabbing him from the stage and throwing him out. Because not only did he disrespect me, but he disrespected more than that. The community that was there. But then there was this other 75% that came to see the show and paid to be there. And it was such a tough thing for me to deal with. And as there was probably like five or six songs left. And the last song they did, I was just counting the seconds. I was in the very back. I had to go in the very back and my heart rate was probably at a 150, and I was just ready to like grab this dude. And the last song was from the Crow soundtrack. I don't know if you're
yeah,
familiar, but unbelievable. And they were so good. That's the thing. So on one end, I'm like, damn, this is good. This is a really good song. On the other end, I'm going to fucking grab this dude at the end and throw him out here. Sorry to swear, but that's how, that's how I felt. So then the song's over and I walk up to him and his band members are there and everyone's just like, oh yeah, this is great. And I get in his face and I'm like, how dare you say what you just said to this crowd here? He goes, what are you talking about? He has his sunglasses on like Mr. Cool guy. Yeah. And I'm like, take your glasses off and look at me. Never ever are you allowed back here. Get the hell out of here right now. Like the fact that you did that and you were here, you insulted everyone in this entire place. And the fact that this is a non-alcoholic brewery, are you stupid? I was like so irate. And the guy just started shaking. And it was such a bad move on his part. He had nothing to gain there. And then the band like kind of came by me and like, what's going on here? And then they had my back and they're like, you're right. I don't know why he said that. They're like, this one's on us. They go, it's not about the money, guys. It's about the fact that you insulted the community here. Mm-hmm. And it was probably the craziest moment. And it's funny because like a few people that were in that crowd that day never really said anything to me. And a couple weeks ago, I was talking to a girl that I know was there. And I was surprised, like, we haven't talked about this moment. Do you remember when that happened? She goes, I remember it like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I could not believe that guy said that. And it was like one of these things where I look back and maybe I should have done something at that moment. But again, many people in that crowd were there for the music. And it was just like a bad situation all around. So there's that extreme, but then there's, you know, this middle ground where people are skeptical and it's like, just try it. So we will spend a lot of times to like at activations doing a blind taste test. In fact, I was just on the news recently and I took our sour beer, which is here, and we did a blind taste test on air, on TV, and I had an alcoholic version of this, which we don't make. We don't make any alcohol beer. But it was a sour beer from a local brewing company and ours. And I just did a blind taste test challenge. I said, tell me which one has alcohol.
Oh my God.
And 50% of people get it wrong normally. I do it on air, I do it live, I do it at beer fests, and it's pretty amazing. So that's a really good way to get through to someone to say, we've come a long way here and try this. But then there'll also be moments. I was pouring beer at a fest this weekend, or it was not a fest, it was a marathon. And right after, probably a 20, she's probably in her mid-20s, she comes up and she's just like, does this have alcohol in it? And I'm like, no, it doesn't. She's like, I want alcohol. And I'm like, well, there's no alcohol here, so you should definitely try this. You know, and it's just like, So it's a mixed bag for sure.
I mean, I definitely think you did the right thing in that situation. I think too, for me, when you go to something like a non-alcoholic brewery, it's just a safe space, right? Where you don't feel judged for not drinking. And when someone does that, it really like disrupts the whole vibe. Well,
and that's the thing. How many non-alcoholic breweries have you been to?
Right.
There's one that I know of in the U.S. Like I thought I would take pride in saying like, oh, you were the only one in Illinois. And then the more I looked into it, I'm like, I don't even think there is another one that's like truly a non-alcoholic brewery. So we were in uncharted waters a bit. Yeah. Maybe he didn't realize it at that moment, but he did say non-alcoholic beer. I don't know. It's hard to justify anything that happened that night, but it was a safe place for people, and they felt slighted because of that. You know, they felt demeaned, and I just think that was acceptable. Like the one thing I can't stand in life is bullies, and that's what I felt like I was doing. He was standing up there and he was being bullied out of the room.
Total bully.
Let me just say, for our listeners who can't necessarily see you right now, Joe, and I can see like half of you, but I'm assuming that singer shit his pants when you did him, because I wouldn't want to mess with you, Joe. So I'm sure he was like, uh-oh. If he was shaking, I think he was also shitting.
Yeah, he should know that. People who don't drink are typically a lot
healthy and strong and muscly.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I had friends of mine that were there that are all martial arts, like jujitsu guys, that and I was just like, here. There's a, I mean, it's an, it, again, he had nothing to gain from it. And now, you know, they reached out to us this year and they're like, hey, can we play again? And we're just like, ignore their email.
What?
Like, are you that dense, really?
Oh my gosh. Know your audience. No. Know your oh audience.
God. And I was about to post something too. Like, that was the other thing, I think, like, you asked how to deal with it. Sometimes just the fact of about to post something and then sitting
and
because I was going to tag them and just say something. But then as much as I wanted to do that, I'm glad I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Last forever. There's, you know, anything you post online, it, you know, it just didn't feel right the next day. It felt perfect in the moment. Like, I'm going to get them. And then, I think at the time I even called my daughter, my 26-year-old daughter. And I was just like, no, she's going to be 26. And I was just like, hey, this is what happened. Like, what do you think I should do? To get advice of a young person, I wouldn't post that right now. You're really emotional about it.
Yes, for sure.
It's like, that's the other thing. It's like, you gotta like breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Which you can do when you're sober.
Yeah, that's the other funny thing about the brewery. So the first night we were there, I mean, I'm sure you've been at a bar that closes and people are lingering around and they're like, okay guys, it was last call 15 minutes ago. Not at Go Brewing. The band ends at 10 and literally everyone just leaves.
Yeah.
It's like a concert. It's
I
like
love that.
It was the funniest moments because no one's spilling stuff. Everyone's polite. Everyone's there. It's quiet. And you're like, what is going on here? Like, it's just the opposite of what you think. So it was really interesting the first like couple months because we were just witnessing this like really good behavior. In fact, the landlord, because we made the place really nice. Again, the bathrooms, we had these nice napkin holders and things like that. And she's like, those will get stolen. And I'm like,
not here.
I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if they will. And they're still there today. So I don't think we've had many incidents. We've had a couple things that have happened where we had a retirement party and most of the crowd was like, honestly, in their like 60s and 70s. And they were probably the rowdiest crowd that we had. And they were like really overly consuming the draft guest beer that we have on tap. That's not even ours.
Oh my God.
And that was probably the worst of it. They were a bit wild, but beyond that, there hasn't been many incidents.
That's awesome.
Like, we aim to still produce non-alcoholic beverages, period. That's what we want to do. But ones that have functional components in them as well. Like, we have one of the first beers in the market. It's our gluten-free amber beer that has ashwagandha and L-theanine in it. And we've had that for the better part of a year. And we want to do more of that and make various waters with adaptogens, cordyceps in them. We're looking into a hemp-derived THC product as well. Like, things that can give the feeling and things that might not be for everyone. If you're sober, you know, again, people are on a spectrum and it's so individual. And now you have this other component of maybe something with no alcohol, but there's another altering effect that can trigger something. So you just have to be careful on what you want to consume. But there is definitely a large cohort of people that want to feel a mind altering effect, even if it's very subtle. So it's like thinking about that and better for you beverages is really where we're at. As far as challenges that we face, 90% of our challenges are the fact that we are very, very adamant that we make our own products. What I did not realize in this space is mostly everyone except for Athletic and a few other companies, they contract brew. So any of these celebrity brands that you see, any of these, some of the larger NA companies that are out there, they don't make their own product. Like, they literally give an order to a brewery like ours to make it for them. And there's nothing wrong with that. But for us, to give us that innovation engine that we want, that flexibility that we think we need to be competitive in the future, we wanted to control our own production. Well, when you do that, you're signing up for a lot of short-term pain for long-term gain, I would say. And that's kind of the challenges constantly, is like 90% of our issues are dealing with. You can't even imagine the things that happen. Like, we ran out of water a few weeks ago. Your brewery, you run out of water. Things break constantly. It's like it's a shit show. But but it's one where you can get through it. And brewers are so resilient. I've never met a group of people that have such a strong work ethic in the brewing community, and it is really incredible. And they do it mostly because they're super passionate about it, and especially our team. Like, they're extremely passionate about what they do. Most people aren't getting in this to be rich and famous. It's a low margin game, and you're doing it because it's a lifestyle. You're creating it, you're creating these moments. And what's really neat about Go Brewing is, like, we have people that have worked in the brewing community for many, many years that have now found Go as a safe place, because it's very easy as a brewer to be an alcoholic, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And get in that. So we have a lot of people that are sober that work for us.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Joe, for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you and learn about Go Brewing and the plans you have for the future. And thank you all for listening to Sisters in Sobriety, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.